Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
It's 9:30. You know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
And of course, it is Crime on the Mind Monday. We have Lieutenant Jim Perez here from the Fairfield Police Department. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been a very active and, you know, very busy last couple of weeks, but particularly the last few days. But I'm okay.
Yeah, we're kind of feeling a little somber here in the station. We are certainly, we've had it as our top headlines all morning long. The two mass shootings, of course, back-to-back within less than 24 hours of each other. I think the biggest thing, Jim, of course, we can give the details and everything that happened, but it's kind of reactionary. I think what Tony and I would love to address on the show is how do we go about being proactive? How do we make sure that, God forbid, this situation is in the Walmart here in Fairfield County or something? How do we make sure that we protect ourselves to the best of our ability?
Well, first and foremost, people need to be familiar with what I like to call not normal. Not normal can save your life. During the Times Square bombing, it was not normal that actually saved the day. It was a person who understood their surroundings, saw that it wasn't a normal environment, and actually reported it. Police departments depend on community members to actually help us to solve crimes, and more importantly, to pinpoint problem individuals. But this is a much bigger problem because it's a multidisciplinary effort that has to take place between police departments, town halls and city halls across the state, and community-based programs. Because we can't do this by ourselves. From a sociological point of view, you have people that are becoming much more isolated than they ever were before, especially with the internet. People don't have to talk to anybody anymore. And when they isolate themselves, they talk about what they want to do to other like-minded individuals across the country. Those people aren't reporting into us to let us know that there's a problem or a trouble with that individual. And this is how these things take place. It's sad. But one of the things that we have to do is we have to start talking to each other. Individuals need to start taking active shooter or workplace violence training. Those trainings give you invaluable information that can help save your life and those of your colleagues. So that's what starts to happen. We need to recognize not normal. We need to work in a multidisciplinary fashion from state, federal, and local on a state, federal, and local level. And more importantly, community policing has to come back. It has to come back with a vengeance, because the only way we're going to be able to do this, and I've often said this, and it's the truth, police departments cannot operate solitarily by themselves. It's the community. Listen, when societal norm is formed and we enforce it, it's the community that comes up with those rules, and we simply enforce it. But we have to work together with schools, working together with other town agencies, in order for us to effectively be able to combat this, or at least reduce the risk of something happening.
We're talking with Lieutenant Jim Perez, Fairfield Police Department, talking a little bit about the mass shootings yesterday in Dayton, the day before in El Paso. How can you protect yourself? How could you be proactive? I saw an article on the internet this morning, and I don't know if you agree with this, but they said in this article, the three things that you should do is, number one, run. Try to form an escape route, kind of be aware of your surroundings, be aware of the exits, get out of there, even if people are disagreeing. If you're with people and they're saying, let's stay put or whatever the case is, it's important to get out of there and help others to escape if possible. What do you think about that?
Here's the thing. So there's different ways to approach this. I say, and this is what I teach, and this is what I say, if you are in a corporate environment or in a working environment, the best thing that you can do is actually lock down in a room without a window and lock it. Studies have shown, and actually, I can show you a video. If anybody, I know a lot of people haven't seen the New Zealand video shooting, but if you watch the video, you notice that the shooter never walks into any closed door. Never did it once, because they're not thinking properly. There's a whole mentality to how these individuals operate and how much stress they're under at that point in time. They're not thinking like a rational person does. If you're in a corporate setting, a building, a municipal building, anything like that, I would say you have to have lockdown procedures. You have to have standard operating procedures. Lockdowns have to be a part of your life in the work environment, just like fire drills are, just like emergency evacuations are. But keep in mind, with an active shooter, it's usually the opposite of just running. You can't just run because there could be other threats outside waiting for those people to come outside. Your best bet is to lock down where you are and have a plan in place so that we can identify you as we're coming into the building. We know where you are. Now, conversely, in a mall setting, when you're with your family, yes, running is the better option. But you should be running into a locked room somewhere. So if you run into a store and they have a back room, that's where you should be going to. I tell people all the time, when you are walking into an unfamiliar building, the first thing you need to do is look at the floor plan. I know it sounds silly, but it's the truth. You look at the floor plan. Everyone has it because it's required by law, whether it's local, state, or federal. Now, when you look at those floor plans, you should be looking at where the bathrooms are, where the manager's offices are, those type of things. Because in an emergency, you're going to do exactly what training you have inside your subconscious. Because and this is very lengthy and getting involved, but I'm going to tell you, when an active shooter things happen, you can teach run, fight, and hide, but unless you teach people how to run, fight, and hide, they're not going to do it. They're going to stand there like a deer in a headlight, and it's not their fault. It's just that the brain, if you understand how the mind works, your brain doesn't want to see violence at any given point in time. So what will happen is your conscious thought, those things that control your direction, your feel, touching, you know, walking, all that goes away, even language. It all goes away. And if you don't have what I like to call training in the subconscious mind, because that's what's going to take over in autopilot, you're just going to stand there. So there's an entire training program that needs to be taught to every single person that can hear me in order for them to really respond appropriately and keep themselves and their families and their coworkers safe.
Yeah, and I think, Jim, one of the things you were saying is kind of getting yourself in the mindset, sort of making sure you almost train yourself so you don't freeze up, you don't worry, and you don't panic in those situations if possible. So how do we do that? How, you know, are there trainings offered, or are there ways that we're supposed to sort of get our brains in gear that we would know how to do this? Because I have to be honest, Jim, it feels like this is happening far too often, to the point that I don't even know if we'll make it through another week before we hear about another mass shooting. So what can we do right now to be ready?
Yeah, there are many training facilities that actually train in that. Unfortunately, a lot of it is geared towards police officers, prosecutors, you know, municipal, state, and federal government employees. But there's a program. I mean, you know, I've taught across the country, but I teach the active shooter program from a very different perspective than everybody else does. Everyone else teaches how to run, fight, and hide, but I speak specifically about the mind and how your mind reacts during violence, and how to prevent yourself from getting tunnel vision, time dilation, auditory exclusion, where like things start to slow down, where you can't hear things. You have to be prepared in that way because, again, we do not want to witness violence. And when your mind does, chances are you're going to freeze unless you get training. Now, after Sandy Hook, I came up with this active shooter program only because I said to myself, there's got to be a way to teach everyone, how to protect themselves and their family. And this active shooter workplace violence training is exactly it. And you know what? I'm not shy to say that, you know, my program has been written up by the New York Times. It's been taught pretty much everywhere. And I'm proud of it, but I'll tell you, I honestly came up with it out of emotional state from Sandy Hook. And I don't think I could even repeat coming up with it again, but it's a very powerful program. And what I'm telling you now is part of the program is that you have to train your mind in how to react so that when something bad happens, you're reacting immediately. But it comes back to a security consciousness also. So it's very involved. It's you have to change how you view the world. And so if you view the world from a security conscious perspective, you will almost always be at an advantage point when something bad happens so that you can react as opposed to just sitting there. Because the mind goes through all these tricks. When violence is taking place in front of you, I'm telling you, you will freeze because your mind is not going to want to believe that it's actually happening. And those moments of frozen time is the difference between life and death. So we need to be able to get everyone to react almost immediately to be able to protect themselves and their family. Then you do that by just following, by having a robust security foundation. It's more involved than what I can talk about in this period of time, but there are ways to be able to reduce it. And for the municipal side and the state side and the federal side, it's a risk mitigator. You know, you want to teach your employees how to be safe during an active shooter. Think about this. We do fire drills all over the place. And when was the last time that there was a school fire? I mean,
right.
Let's think about it. But it doesn't matter that there's no fires. It's the training that the kids are receiving so that when it does go bad, it's not going to be sunny and you're not going to be smiling at your best friend because you're going to see them in a few minutes outside. It's going to be cold, dark, gray, and wet. And all your mind needs to know is straight into the right. So likewise, with active shooter training, this is exactly what we need to do. We need to train every individual to be able to react during and it doesn't have to be an active shooter. It could be an accident. It could be a natural disaster. It could be anything. If you teach people how to train, how to appropriately respond, they will, and it does save lives.
Yeah, and I think maybe it might be a good idea, Jim, if after we get off the air, maybe we could see if Tony and I, maybe the office here, maybe the station could do some active training with you, and maybe we could...
Yeah, I'd be happy to do it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it'd be
Phenomenal. It's phenomenal, and it's very worthwhile, and I'm telling you that the trainings that we do literally change people's lives, and I have been approached numerous times afterwards, and people telling me about how, you know, they always tell me a story of something that happened and how they immediately went to the training. Listen, what I teach is exactly what police officers and military personnel get before they go out to battle or before they go out on the street. So it's the exact same training. I changed it so that it can be effective for the civilian population. But knowing your surrounding, understanding not normal, understanding that anything can happen at any time, and then being able to react appropriately is the whole fundamental piece of the training. And that's what's needed, really, for society right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jim Perez, we always appreciate having you every Monday morning for Crime on the Mind. Thank you so much, Lieutenant, and we will be in touch with you.
Absolutely. Take care. All right. Take care, guys.
I'm reading over the weekend that the average American spends about 53 hours a month doing manual labor on their home. Do you spend a lot of time on your home, on the outside, on the inside? And
I did in the beginning of the summer.
Yeah.
I like power washed it. I like to, I mean, my husband like cuts the grass and stuff. But do you mean like the actual house, like the structure?
Well, what they're saying here is a lot of people, they devote 6 hours a month on mowing the lawn, 5 hours of doing laundry, 4 hours each on these. Listen to this. Pulling weeds, gardening, watering the lawn, outdoor cleaning, random yard tasks, cleaning the bathroom, cleaning the bedroom, washing the dishes, and vacuuming. Okay, I'm telling you right now, pulling weeds, gardening, and watering the lawn, outdoor cleaning, random yard acts, Tony Reno does not partake in any of that.
Well, you're kind of lucky because you're in a complex.
Exactly.
So you're smart.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I learned housework real quick. I mean, half those things that you mentioned, like cutting the lawn, thankfully my husband finds that therapeutic for some crazy reason. But yeah, I realized very quickly buying our first house in Connecticut that it's... there's a lot of stuff we have to do. When I was living in a condo, it was a lot easier.
Well, see, like my son, he was always in a condo, mm-hmm. always for the first 27 years of his life or whatever it was. Now he buys this home, and I said to him, I says, it's not going to be easy. What do you mean? I says, well, there's a lot of maintenance mm-hmm. that goes into owning a home. Now, unless you're going to pay somebody to do it, you know, it's really going to take up a lot of your time. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, Melissa, I don't think he was in that house for a week when he realized,
holy moly, what did I do?
There is a lot of work to be done here, you know?
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of property, so that has to be maintained. Him and his girl, they work crazy hours,
mm-hmm.
and it's just very, very hard to get all of this stuff done, you know? And you know, like people say, well, you know, the condo, you've got the common charges. Okay, the common charges. But,
right, but that covers an awful lot.
But yeah, but if I was living in a house that I owned with property, I would be paying somebody to cut the lawn and all of that, too.
Exactly. You know? Well, and you bring up a good point, Tony, that I think sometimes when you buy a house, you're thinking, oh, it's just the house I'm maintaining, whether that means shingles coming down or the roof or whatever. But you're exactly right. If you buy anything with any kind of yard or property, I know for ourselves, one of the biggest draws for us was the fact that we were buying a property that was near a river and a lot of woods. We love that because it reminded us of Vermont. Well, you know, we bought that in the winter time where everything is kind of bare, and holy moly, we didn't know that. I think we ended up having our lawn assessed after my husband got poison ivy twice this summer. He's highly allergic to poison ivy. And I thought, where are you getting this from? Like, all we're doing is simple yard work. I'm not seeing it. 85% of our property has poison ivy. And
Oh my God.
Yeah. So Derek and I realized immediately, oh my gosh, every spring now we're going to have somebody do a full spring cleanup. We're going to have weeds like sprayed. We're going to have our whole yard sprayed, a whole nine yards that we didn't think about when you're buying a house. I think that's a whole other thing that you get slapped with in the face really quickly, especially if you don't buy it during the season when those problems pop up,
and I'll
like
you,
November.
And I'll tell you something else. My son bought a home in Monroe. It's beautiful up there. Mm-hmm. It is. It's quiet. It's beautiful. He's got so much property, Melissa, that he didn't realize how much property that he had. One neighbor came over and knocked on the door, was very nice about it, but told him, you do realize that this is your property here, too. You've got to maintain this and cut the... It was like you could put like a small... apartment on it, or a small shed. He even realized what the heck he had.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like it gets out of control. But you know, you've got your problems, condo life. You got your problems in
oh,
the house,
sure.
You know?
There's just I just think that no matter as soon as you own or as soon as you move out of your parents' house, really, as soon as you move on to adulthood, you find out that there's just always going to be a problem. Some years are worse than others, but it's just a constant. Whether it's your washer breaks down, or hey, you know, the dishwasher decided to. That it just doesn't want to run anymore. You know, it's always something. So there you go.
There you go. Just keep an eye on it. Just watch what you're doing. Melissa, by the way, today is August 5th, and it's National Underwear Day.
Oh.
Yes, National Underwear Day.
This show just took a turn.
Yes, a little bit. I mean, I'm not going to ask you any personal questions.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
That wouldn't be right. But is like your husband, for example, is he briefs or boxers?
It's so funny because I always get this wrong. So because I've been with my husband for so long, he was boxers in college. He's briefs now. I think I have that right. I think.
Okay.
I think that's right. I'm going to go with briefs.
Okay. No, I was briefs.
Why, are you a boxer or a brief guy?
I was briefs for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And then...
What's the difference? That sounds so stupid, but I don't shop for my husband's underwear. I don't think he can do it on his own.
Right.
What's the difference between boxers and briefs?
Well, boxers are like
They're like loose, yeah.
They're loose. You know what I mean?
But briefs are like the tight ones?
Yeah, they're a little tight, the briefs. When you're wearing boxers, Your brothers have room to move around.
Yeah, you're chilling like a villain. Yeah, exactly. I think Derek has briefs. I'm pretty sure now.
Okay.
I think.
All right. My wife was the one. She was like, you know, first time she saw me in my tidy whities, she said, no. We're going out and we're going to get you some boxer shorts. And I says, okay. All right.
Yeah.
She did not like the tidy whities.
Oh.
But as
I don't know why. It's pretty hot. All right.
As time went on now, my weight fluctuates, you know, and I put on the boxer shorts, and my wife makes cracks like, ugh, it looks like you're wearing a dress. It looks like, look at that. What is that? You look like you're, you know, or my wife will be like,
man.
You know, ugh,
you can't mess with her. No, that's funny.
You look like a beached whale. Come on, you know.
Oh, dang.
But we're definitely in our house. We are boxers.
I used to collect boxers because when I was at Laurelton for high school, I wore boxers, you know, for my jumpers. Instead of shorts. Most girls wore athletic shorts. I liked boxers. So I would actually go in and buy pairs of boxers. And they always assumed it was so weird. The clerks would always be like, oh, how nice. Are you buying boxers for your brother? And I'd be like, that's a very odd gift to buy. No, they're for myself.
Well, so in other words, you've gone out in public in boxer shorts.
Well, like I was wearing my own underwear, but then I was wearing boxer shorts as like my shorts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now let me ask, is there anything wrong with this? Okay. And if it is, please tell me.
Okay.
One day I was wearing boxer shorts.
Okay.
Okay. I had a button-down shirt on.
Okay.
Okay, with long sleeves. It came down to about here. And my wife goes, we got to throw this garbage out. So I says, all right, I'll do it. I started collecting it. And she goes, what are you doing? I was, I'm going to throw out the garbage. She goes, well, aren't you going to put pants on? I said, these look like shorts, and I've got my shirt on and everything. No, Tony, we're not going out in our boxer shorts to throw out that.
Because that's really comparable to your underwear. See, okay. Like, girls will wear them as, like, shorts sometimes. I know that sounds weird. But it's the same thing as it's not fair that men can just wear a bathing suit without wearing, like, a T-shirt or a top. They can go, you know, and show off and we can't do that. So we can wear boxers in public and you can't.
I'm one of those guys that wears his T-shirt in the pool. I'm one of those guys.
Oh, well, I appreciate you.
Yeah, so that's
all. So we're all equal. So then, fine, you wear your boxers in public. If I can wear them in public, you can.
Okay, you would have stopped your husband to throw out the garbage?
To go down, no. No, because he's done that. He's brought the garbage down to the end of the driveway in his boxers.
Yeah, but he's got a shirt on.
Well, yeah, of course.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to the grocery store, I'd say put pants on or put shorts on.
Yes.
But yeah, if you're just going out to get the mail or something, I'm not going to make my husband put shorts on. No.
I mean, my wife made me feel
that's
like
our property. If he wants to walk around in boxers, whatever. He mows the lawn in boxers. I don't know, whatever.
She made me feel like I was committing a crime. All right.
Well, I don't know. We differ on that. That should be tomorrow's Facebook question. Can you go out to get the mail or toss out the garbage or mow the lawn in boxers?
There you go.
Or should you put shorts on, for crying out loud?
All right. Anyway, it's National Underwear Day, and I will be observing that as soon as I get home this morning.
Who's paying? So Tony and I have gone out to lunch a couple of times now, or like we'll go out to breakfast sometimes after the show. And recently we went out to lunch. It was Tony, myself, and a few other people here at the station. And this is the second time Tony's done this, and we actually get into a public fight, Tony and I do, because we completely disagree on this. When it comes to paying for the check, I feel very strongly about covering at least what I ordered. And Tony feels, you know, very old school. I'm going to cover the check. I asked everyone to come out to lunch. It's on me. And I always think to myself, this is the second time now, Tony, where you've done this. And if you and I are going to stay co-hosts and we're going to keep going out with each other, I don't want you paying for the check every single time. Or then, why can't we just split the bill like normal people? Why can't, you know?
Okay, here's the thing. Here's the way that I feel about it, okay? First of all, I go out with... when I go out with you guys, I'm like the grandfather, okay? I mean, everybody there is like in their 20s, maybe 30, okay? I feel that each and every one of you, there's you, there's Christian, and there's Chris Mancini. I feel that each and every one of you, each and every day, do your part here to hold me up, okay? If it wasn't for you guys, a lot of things just might fall through the cracks. You guys do a lot for me during the course of a day, during a course of a week. So when we go out to lunch, one or two times a year that we do it, I have no problem picking up the check. She gets very aggravated, and she makes a scene right there in the restaurant. Chris Mancini he gets up and he just leaves. The other kid,
Christian's very calm about it.
Christian's very calm. Christian will always put something down.
He does the tip.
Yeah, he'll always put something down on the table, which is very, very nice. And Melissa and I, we walk out of the restaurant screaming at each other.
Well, because Tony, I do find that's very nice, but the problem with Tony is he doesn't want to accept that he too is very helpful. Look, Tony, you were gone all last week, and while everyone was so kind, I had a lot of phone calls. People, oh my God, you're doing great. People miss you. I've already gotten 3 Facebook messages. Oh, thank God Tony is back. Not that you're awful, Melissa, but thank God Tony's back. So it's no secret that you also are very valued. So why should you be the one covering it? Like, why can't I cover it one time? Like, why can't we rotate then? If you're going to cover the check this past time, why can't I cover it the next time? Or why can't we just split it? I don't know. Like, why don't I pay for your meal? If you want to pay for mine, we could do something like that.
Okay. All right. So what's the question of the day?
The question of the day is, who's paying? When you go out to lunch with a coworker, because it's different with spouses or with family, you kind of have your own sort of secret code with that. But when you go out to lunch with coworkers, do you cover the check or do you go Dutch? What's your thing? How do you cover that? Do you talk about it ahead of time? Because we don't really talk about it ahead of time. And then all of a sudden the check gets there and there's Tony Reno taking over and we all hand him credit cards and nah, I don't want it. So we end up in the same situation every single time.
All right. That's the question of the day. Do you go Dutch or do you pick up the check? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say 100% of the people are going to say Dutch?
Maybe. Or, you know, we've already gotten one. I literally just posted this question, Tony, and we already got one person who said, I don't go out with coworkers. So John's got the right idea. Maybe we just only stick to hanging out at work, and that's it.
Very funny.
It's that time of the morning where we check in on your answers on Facebook. So the question of the day was, do you pay it in full or do you do Dutch? When you go out with your coworkers for lunch or dinner or something, do you pick up the whole tab or do you guys split it? Recently, Tony and I went out for a lunch with a couple of our friends here at the station. We brought Christian and I think Chris Mancini and even Jay Michaels with WeeBee 108. We were all out. And Tony, being the nice guy that he is, picked up the check. And I say he's a nice guy, but I also screamed at him at the restaurant because you do that all the time where you just pick up the check. That's just a Tony-ism, I would say. But I always feel bad. I think, well, gosh, I wouldn't have eaten anything if I knew you were gonna do that, Tone.
Well, the next time I won't ask you.
You won't ask me to go?
Yeah, and then the next time, you know, the next farewell lunch that we do, I won't ask you.
Now you're breaking my heart. Why can't I just pay for my stuff?
Because this is the way that I look at it. Mancini does a lot of stuff for me. Christian does a lot of stuff for me. You do a lot of stuff for me. I feel sometimes here behind the scenes, of course, on the air, I'm great. But behind the scenes, I feel like I'm a useless piece of garbage sometimes. And that is my way of just repaying you. That's all that is.
No, it's very nice. It really is. But all of us, we all look at each other like we've got six heads because we are. Did he really just pay the whole check? He didn't need to do that.
Well, you're cheap people. That's the whole thing.
We like to get salad. We go to the salad bar. But we wanted to know from you whether it's the salad bar, maybe it's a nice steak lunch. I don't know. I don't know where you guys are going to get lunch. But what do you think? Do you go Dutch or do you take the whole tab? And we got a number of answers.
Well, Chris says Dutch because that's the way to do it. Otherwise, other people will be angry and not want to go out anymore. Okay.
I mean, I get angry, but I still want to go out to lunch with you.
Yeah. You get angry, but you still take it. I'll take it.
Yeah, go ahead. There you go. John Chase said it very simply. I never eat with coworkers, ever. All right, fair enough.
John, I like your style, Johnny. All right. Irene says, I'm retired, but I would go Dutch.
Okay. Gina has a kind of a plan that they have in place. I have lunch with a business associate every month. We get the same thing every month. We share an appetizer and get the same entree, and then we split the bill in half.
All right. Okay, Gina. All right. Joni says, if I invite someone to lunch, then I pay. If it's a casual group for lunch, then we all pay. All right, Joni. All right.
See?
Okay. Very,
so,
very good.
It's, you know.
So most of you disagree.
With you.
With me.
I mean, you're a really nice guy, Tony. You're a very stand-up man. And like I said, I'm not angry at you like you're a horrible person. You're a great person. I just always feel badly. I think, oh my gosh, I feel like, dang, I wouldn't have eaten anything if it meant you were going to cover the check. I would just have water and that's it.
It's just for the lousy one time a year, two times a year. No big deal. And like I said, everybody does a lot of favors for Tony Reno, and this is just his way of repaying.
Well, we appreciate you, Tony. But seriously, if you pay for the next check, I'm going to, I don't know, I'm probably just going to yell more.
You're going to what? Yell
just
more?
Just going to keep yelling.
All right. There you go.